Welcome everyone to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell and I'm the host of this podcast and the creator of Balance by Megan. On this podcast, we talk about all things yoga, wellness, health, and spirituality with guests from around the world. So grab your crystals, grab your essential oils, and let's dive into it. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell, and today we have a fun episode for you. We kind of go all over the place with this episode. We talk about yoga, we talk about pole dancing, we talk about energetic boundaries, being an intuitive medium, and so much more. And this conversation, of course, happened with the incredible Amy White. Before we dive into today's podcast episode and what you are in store for, I wanted to take a moment and talk about glowy, dewy, hydrated skin. And of course, right now I am using Frey Skincare, which is a natural skincare line made with argan oil and free from all of those nasty things like parabens, SLS, DEA, and more. My favorite product from them is the Deep Replenishing Serum, and I'm using their night cream right now, which is really concentrated. I find that it's so hydrated. I'm really, really particular about the things that I put on my skin, and right now I am having a moment with Frey Skincare. Right now, all Balance Your Life podcast listeners get 10% off their products off of their website with code BALANCEBYMEG, and they are so confident that you are going to absolutely love their products just as much as I do, that if you do not love it, it is a 100% money-back guarantee, so you really have nothing to lose. That's code BALANCEBYMEG at checkout for 10% off of their orders. You should know that they're always having sales as well, so you can always grab that discount code and get your sale on at Frey Skincare. This episode of the podcast has been sponsored by Nature's Remedy CBD. Who doesn't love CBD? I feel like we're talking about CBD all the time. It's always coming up in conversations. It's always coming up online. And there's a reason why it is so powerful. CBD can help you with sleep, anxiety, pain relief, inflammation, overall health, and so much more. You are, of course, always encouraged to talk to your doctor, but in my experience, most doctors are on board with it, and honestly, the product speaks for itself. This product from Nature's Remedy is hemp-derived, there's no THC, and it's all organic. For the time being, this product is only available in Canada. So you can go ahead and email me info@balancebymegan.com for more information on the products and learn how you can place your order. That's Nature's Remedy CBD. All right. As I said, today on the podcast, I am joined by Amy White. Amy is an international best-selling author, highly sought-after speaker, and intuitive medium on a mission to help individuals heal the past, discover personal truths, and thrive. Amy's one-on-one coaching, digital courses, and public talks allow audiences to gain a deeper understanding of the beliefs that are blocking them from their most authentic lives. Her insights and techniques help usher in big, bold changes and more subtle aha moments that lead us down closer towards our dream. A once reluctant medium, Amy now embraces her innate intuitive gifts and has made it her intent to show up in the world as a truth teller by bringing forward powerful messages for personal transformation. On this episode, we talk about how she discovered she had a gift as an intuitive medium, what it was like for her to shift her beliefs of judgment and rejection to allowing her true self to come forward and not care what other people think. I feel like we could all use that. Amy gets real deep and real raw about her journey. We also discuss deconditioning our thoughts and beliefs, leaning into the unglamorous parts of our lives, how we can set energetic boundaries, how we are always evolving and what that can look like for us, and so much more. So with that, please welcome Amy White to the Balance Your Life podcast. Welcome to the show, Amy. I'm so excited to have you on.
I am so excited to be here.
Can you give our listeners a little background of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today?
Absolutely. So I am an intuitive medium, a channel, and a truth bomb dropper. And I work one-on-one with people and in groups, channeling the wisdom of the greater consciousness, which is a group of energies that represent the infinite wisdom. And I'm coming to you from Southern California right now.
So nice. I was going to say, we're doing video right now and you look very tanned. I feel like you're getting a lot of sun where you currently are.
I am. I try to get my sunshine dose every day. It's very important to my health and wellness.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just east of Toronto and it's finally been sunny for like the last week. And I'm like, I try to get all my work done so I can take some time in the afternoon to get some sun.
Yeah, I grew up in that area. So I know that when the sun is out, it's really a big deal.
Yes, it honestly is. So I'm super curious, an intuitive medium. It sounds so interesting and so fascinating, but I'm curious, how did you even get started on this journey and to becoming an intuitive medium?
Yes, it wasn't a straight line, that's for sure. I actually started the first part of my adult life in corporate roles, working for big companies and small companies and many different levels of leadership and technology and, you know, management of people, teams, process, the very left brain. And even as I was in those roles, I recognized that, you know, there was something that I had. I called it my gut sense, my corporate street smarts. But, you know, under the surface, I knew that I knew things. I didn't know how I knew. And as I look back, you know, to even being, you know, a child, I knew that I knew things that I didn't know how I knew then also. But because of the stories and conditioning from my family of origin, I really shut that part of me down for a long time, but well into my 20s. And it was just through a series of, you know, serendipitous events where I started to recognize not only did I have this street smart savviness, but that there was something deeper under the surface. And my soul was really calling me to explore what this intuitive sense was, what this inner wisdom, inner knowing sense was. And it's been a, you know, decades plus, you know, journey, multiple decades, journey to unfold and unravel the old stories and the, you know, and the belief systems that held me from really feeling brave enough to allow this connection to be. But I was working my corporate job up until about 2014. And at that point, I realized through, again, a series of events that I was climbing the ladder that was leaning against the wrong wall. And luckily for me, or I say luckily, but, you know, everything is so divinely orchestrated in my world, I had been doing coaching on the side. So I was working these corporate roles. I was doing this coaching practice, business and life coaching. And that's in the coaching arena is really where I started to open up to the intuition. And when I decided to quit my corporate job, I felt very guided to launch into this business coaching and life coaching as a full-time endeavor. And very, very quickly after that, I kind of morphed from business and life coaching into the intuitive work because it was so in my face. It was so, you know, visceral that I knew there was no other choice in my experience than to move in that direction. So it's been this unfolding over the course of many, many years. And each time I take a step, you know, the bridge builds around me. And I feel like I can be, you know, bolstered and supported enough to take the next step and the next step and the next step.
Amazing. I love everything that you're saying. And I'm just curious, when you say intuitive medium, is this like, even as a small child, were you noticing like people were unhappy or you were just getting these like, quote unquote, like these gut feelings like, oh, this person should be doing this with their life, or I'm seeing this unfold for them. Like, what did that intuitive medium, I don't know what to call it, mediumship, yeah, look like for you?
Yeah. So this is a really interesting question, because I feel like this way of being has been with me since the very beginning. So instead of having these aha moments of memories of specific situations, I feel like I was just being me, and that included knowing things about people that I didn't know how I knew, and connecting into realms and with spirits and souls from the non-physical. Because my earliest memories are my family of origin telling me that it's bad and wrong to connect into anything other than God and in any way other than through the church. And that if I was to do that, I was going to bring bad to the family. So really my earliest memories were, I was probably just being me, and I was freaking out my family because I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to be doing that, right? That I wasn't supposed to be, reading people or sensing what was coming or having a deeper insight into situations and circumstances. So it was kind of more along those lines, where I was very much conditioned to believe it was bad and wrong. And the burden as a small child, and I still remember, I remember this viscerally in my body, thinking that I was carrying this burden of bringing bad on my family if I were to be me. It was really confusing. And so the only thing that I could do was shut it down, and just really locks, bolts, barricades, brick walls, the whole thing. It sprouted itself, over and over my lifetime. Even as a child, I have memories of certain situations where I would know things that I didn't know how I knew, but I really, as soon as it started to happen, it was like, go back in that cell, go back in the dungeon. You're not allowed here.
I'm curious too, because it sounds like that is some heavy stuff to be dealing with as an adult, let alone as a child. And I feel like there's so many people in this world where I'm speaking to, whether it's yoga or health or wellness or spirituality of some sense, where they almost hit this point of feeling so down, something is so wrong with their life that they make that switch. But I'm curious, for someone who is this is so wrong, your family is so against it, what was that pivotal shift where you're like, I don't care about this anymore. There's something that's pulling me to do this. And, my family's either going to come along for the ride or they're not. But, I'm just saying, maybe I'm so unhappy, or this life event happened that propelled me to go this way. What made you kind of switch those beliefs around and go, it's time for Amy to shine and to do her own thing?
Yes, I love this question. And I'm just going to be super transparent. I went kicking and screaming, literally clawing the ground, as my soul was sort of dragging me forward. But you're right. I had several really big pivotal moments in this opening, in this awakening for me. And the first was in my late 20s, when I was recently divorced. I had two small children. I was working this crazy corporate full-time plus job and, juggling flaming chainsaws all the time. And I was laying in bed one night and I was just thinking about how I felt like my life was completely off the rails. And I kind of just said out loud to any being that was listening, what can I do? What can I do to get my life back on track? I know this isn't what it's supposed to feel like, or I know this isn't what I'm here only for, right? To experience this. And I heard loud and clear, you need to learn to love yourself. And this was not the self-love sort of, marketing, cliche things that we hear, right? This was so deep and so old and so knowing that I just surrendered to it. And I said, okay, I don't know how to do this. I really don't know how to do this, but I'm open to the possibility that I can learn how to do this. And then it's been this big, you know, this unfolding little by little as I was able to release the grasp on all of the old beliefs, all of the old conditioning of the conditioning that I had, the stories I had created about myself and my ego and all of those things. I had to sort of little by little by little pulling back, you know, teeny tiny layers. There were a couple other big pivots for me in this awakening. The second big pivot was maybe about 5 or 6 years later when my grandmother passed away, and she and I were very, very close. And shortly after she crossed over to the non-physical, she started showing up around me. And she would be in the car when I was driving down the freeway or in my kitchen when I was cooking dinner. And it was really organic and it felt really safe. And the more I opened to her, the more conversation we were able to have. And I really started to recognize this being, you know, a gift and an avenue that I had to communicate with souls and spirit. And then the third kind of big pivot was that probably 10 years after that, my son, who was 16 at the time, went through a very severe mental health crisis. And during his crisis, I had a really big coming home to myself of understanding at a different level what it meant to connect into my own, you know, inner being, to come home to myself more, to love myself more. So the kind of those three things were just huge openings for me. And after my son's crisis, which lasted about 2 years, I was just a completely different person in a different realm is the only way I can describe it, and much, much more open to all of the gifts that I had come into this life with. And, you know, there were two, as I started to step out into this role, you know, professionally and openly and publicly, there were two things that I kind of was carrying with me as fears. The first, of course, was how my family was going to react. And then the second was how the people who knew me only in the corporate space were going to react. And surprisingly enough, both have been and were my biggest supporters. And my family of origin, they kind of, it was almost like this loving resignation of like, yeah, we knew you'd finally kind of come back to that who you were, but it wasn't, they didn't push against it. It was really fascinating for me because it really was this big fear of like what was going to happen and how were they going to react and, you know, were they going to reject or abandon me because I was stepping into who I've been all along, but who I was really just getting to know at deeper and deeper levels.
I love everything that you're saying so much. And I feel like there's so much of it that I can relate to. The one thing that I want to touch on, because I completely understand what you were saying, and I want to break down this like stigma of sometimes I think when we hear the word like self-love in personal development, we think of like, oh, this person's always like butterflies and rainbows and they're always, you know, meditating and just like living in this world. And it's so funny to think that a lot of self-love is like you have to do like a lot of dark, deep healing work. And it's like, it's so freeing at the time and afterwards, but it's like, it's not all butterflies and it's not all rainbows. And it's, you know, you're going through a lot of like heavy stuff, but it's this feeling of like, just like the weight being off your shoulders and you're just like, oh, like something was holding me down. I don't know what it is. And this just feels so uplifting. And even if you're still going up, it's just that initial, like, this feels right. This feels like I'm finally making headway. Is that how you kind of felt too? Like, was it like, you know I'm going to go through some dark stuff right now, but like, I'm in such a position of like not loving my life. Things have to change. You know, even I want to help my son out. Like, I need to make that pivotal step. And even if I have to uncover some stuff, like I know it's going to be for the greater good.
Yeah, I wish I could tell that story. Like I said, I did a lot of kicking and screaming and, you know, dragging my feet through this. I knew this is sort of the paradox, I think, of awakening, is that I knew that there was something more here for me. And I didn't want it to be in the painful dark night of the soul way. But as I've gone through multiple sort of deep dives into the shadow, you know, side of things, I realized that that is really where the juice is. It's where the, you know, the contrast is really where the magic is. And so when I was able to come into understanding of that, it definitely made the path easier. But for a while, I really fought it. I didn't want to have to go through those things to learn deeper about myself, to learn how to come into that connection with myself. Now, I also recognize that part of my journey was the stories I was telling about how healing had to look. And so because I had the story of I needed a crisis to learn my lesson, you know, that's what life was bringing me. So I think there's, you know, again, there's the this and here. Now I recognize much more, and I'm much more open to sort of diving below the surface to explore those things that are not so easy to look at, because I know, as you said so beautifully, that coming out the other side is really magical. And it is, you know, for the purpose of evolution. I think the thing, you know, for me, because as I said earlier, I channel the wisdom of the greater consciousness, and the greater consciousness describes themselves as the connection into the infinite wisdom that resides within each one of us. And so when I'm communicating with the greater consciousness, whether it's for myself and my own personal practice, or whether it's with clients or in group settings, the thing that they often talk about is this idea that we aren't here to transcend the human experience. Like, as souls, we came into this earth school for the purpose of really experiencing what it means to be human. The messy, the darker, the joy, the grief, the sorrow, the fun, the play, all of it in one package. And so when we think about self-love, you know, I think we're conditioned in some ways societally to believe that that means somehow we need to transcend this humanness to only be this high vibration soul. But what the greater consciousness says, and I love this so much because it really resonates with me in my body, is that we're actually here to bring together the human aspect of ourselves and the soul aspect of ourselves in the same moment. In the same moment, they call that the balance point. And when we can kind of, you know, bring those things together to straddle both of those aspects, that's where our soul evolution happens. That's where the deeper connection into our inner knowing happens. And it's from that point that we really can tap into what the, I don't want to say maybe truer definition, but the more resonant definition of what self-love means. It's that space of honoring the whole of who we are. So as you were saying, like diving into that darkness and then honoring that experience as best we can, and knowing that at some point we'll rise above the surface, you know, and feel the sunshine on our face, and that it's that ebb and flow that is really this journey for us. And the more I came into contact with that, the easier it's been for me to go through those experiences.
Yes, I relate with this so much. It was one of the things that we really learned during yoga teacher training was, and this was just the philosophy that I was taught, not the case across the board, but it's like this idea of like tantric, like we are here to experience everything. It's not like you're here to suffer and then you do something to get into, you know, that better place, or, you know, heaven, or you go to hell. Like that's not what we were taught. Like if you do bad here, you go to hell. If you do good here, you go to heaven. It's like you're here to experience everything, the good, the bad, the sad, the happy. I'm also of the belief that like life is meant to be enjoyed and we're meant to have a good time and we're meant to thrive, but it doesn't always mean that we're like thriving all the time and we're always high vibe. Like it's, you know, if you're having a bad day, have a bad day, but also don't let that carry on to your next week, your next month, your years ahead. Like experience it as you're experiencing it. And then, you know, just find the meaning in some of those more painful points of our lives or even grief, instead of finding like, you know, if someone passes away, instead of being like in that moment, like I found gratitude in it. It's like, okay, what is the meaning in this passing away? Like, can you find maybe not like right in that second, you know, the happiness of it, but like, you know, I got to spend these last few days with them. Or if that's not the case, you know, going forward, if I didn't get to spend as much time as I wanted with my loved one, what can I do going forward to make sure that that doesn't happen again and that I never feel this feeling again?
Yeah, it's really powerful. And I think that's one of the things, again, I see very often in the work that I do is that many of my clients come to me and they don't realize that it's not an either or, right? We don't have to be one or the other. We can be in grief and thriving at the same time. We can be, you know, in joy and still be experiencing challenging times. It's, we don't have to choose. Both can be present. And I think that's back to the whole, you know, the wholeness conversation. Like, can you own within yourself all that you're experiencing without trying to push the harder feelings away and only strive for the good feelings, but to say like in this moment, I'm feeling grief and my life is really beautiful. Like in this moment, it's those kinds of reframing that really makes space for us to come into contact with those deeper evolutionary opportunities. You know, our souls are here, really, they tell me this all the time, our souls are here for one purpose, and it's for evolution. And every experience that we have, whether as humans we deem it good, bad, or ugly, it is for the benefit of the soul's evolution. So the soul doesn't judge our experiences, you know, as, oh, we shouldn't feel this way, we need to move out of this feeling. The soul goes, oh man, this is so juicy and yummy. And we're expanding, human and soul together, because of it. So it's when we can kind of look at it in that frame, it gives more space for us, I think, to have ease, even when things are challenging. And this isn't about bypassing, right? Sometimes you just need to, you know, lay on the floor and have like a deep soul primal cry, you know, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, you know, and then to be able to decide, do I unpack my bags and live in only this space, or can I expand my vision, my purview, to see all of what is in my life right now? And that grief is an aspect of it. It may be in moments the biggest thing you can see, but it isn't the all of who we are, even you know, in those deep, dark moments.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm curious, as an intuitive medium, I can imagine the types of people you might come into contact with. And I imagine at times, some of that can be both very uplifting and very high vibe, and you've taken on somebody's amazing energy. And on the flip side, your energy has started to become drained because you're with somebody who's just like draining your energy, or they're just not in a great place. How do you kind of find the balance of recharging your energy so that you're not taking on someone else's? And, you know, even with those high vibe energy, like how do you kind of like embody that so that you can keep that going forward and kind of like store it, if you will?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question too, because one of the things that I've learned, and as a recovering people pleaser, and certainly as a conditioned empath, right? To when I say that, I mean like even from a young age, I was conditioned to read the room and to know how people felt even before they felt, and I took on a lot of energy of other people. I've had to get very clear with good, solid energetic boundaries. And one of the things in my practice is that I don't take on anyone's energy. The energy, you know, that's someone else's energy. That's not mine. My role is to be the clearest, cleanest channel of the information that the clients need or the groups need to have in the moment. And so really going into all of this work with the intention that, you know, there's the boundary is that other people's energy isn't allowed in to my space, and nor do I invite it. You know, many times as empaths, we learn to read energy by merging with other people's energy. So it was a big lesson for me to learn how to be in the energy, to connect into the energy without the need to merge. So that boundary, that energetic boundary, is really important. So very often, most of the time, I leave a reading, regardless of the emotional or energetic status of the client, very high vibe. But I also, in addition to the boundary setting, I do a little disconnection at the end of every reading, session, interview, any time that I'm connecting in with someone else's energy, that just allows me to come back to myself, you know, and it's just like claiming five things that are unique about me. And then the third thing that I do, because it's really important for me to have this clean channel, as I was saying, or clear channel, is I use physical movement as my psychic hygiene. And so I have a physical movement practice every day that just keeps all of my energy, all of the energy flowing through me. So as I'm moving through the world, if I'm picking up unintentionally or unconsciously energy of other people or energy of other things, that I'm able to move that energy through my system so that it's not sticking, you know, and my intention isn't to carry it forward. And I know it sounds very odd perhaps when I say this, but very often people will ask me, you know, do I have a vested interest in whether a client follows the guidance or wisdom that they're being given during a reading? And my answer is no, which is part of the boundary. So when I give information, when I share the channeled information during a reading, after that reading is done, I don't really think about whether or not that client has chosen to move forward with the guidance or not. It's so that's a really clear delineation for me. Where in the past, when I first started to do this work, you know, I really felt invested in, like, you know, whether or not they took action and how they were going to take action, and even feeling a little off put if they weren't taking the guidance and putting it into play. But now, you know, as I've matured this practice in my own experience, I recognize that what a client does with the information is really none of my business. And that helps me to stay really clear and clean with how I do this work.
There's so many things that I want to say to this. Number one is, I feel like, I love that you said you're like a recovering people pleaser. I feel like I'm in that step of, like, I'm in the meetings right now. Yeah. Because the one thing that I find is that I very much merge with people's energy. It's like, as soon as I sense someone or feel someone or go into a room, I'm either like, whoa, there is like not great energy going on here. Or I take on like the high vibe, which doesn't sound bad initially, like if you're with somebody who's super high vibe and you kind of embody that, but it's also not my energy. And I'm really trying very hard to create those boundaries. And I don't know if you've done any sort of Reiki training, because my
Reiki master used to say the same thing. She's like, oh no, like I don't take on people's energies. I disconnect. And I was like, well, what do you like? Do you have crystals that help you do this? Do you like change your clothes after? Like, how do you not take on people's energy? Because that's the one thing that I really find is that I'm very drawn into people's energy, good and bad. And it's been challenging for me to set those boundaries and to, you know, not connect with them. And on the flip side too, you know, if you're, you know, for in my case, if I'm doing yoga with somebody and, you know, I can see that it's making a difference for them and they seem to be enjoying it, but then they fall off the railroad or they get derailed. And for me, I'm like, no, come back. Like, you know how much this helped you. Like, why don't you want to come back and do this? And I get invested into people's, like, I want them to do well because I've seen this change within myself. I've seen that change within this person. And I'm just curious. Yeah. Like, do you feel like it was just timing? Like it took you some time to get there? Or do you have any like, yeah, like I always wear like this crystal and that seems to help, or it's just training, it's just maturity? Like, what is it that you feel like really helped you hone in on not merging with people's energy?
Yeah, it's been a process for sure. This was not a switch flip and overnight I you know, learned how to set good boundaries. But there were a couple of things. I you know, I did it step by step by step. So I did have a much more ritualistic way of dealing, you know, with the energy separation when I first started doing this full time, you know, and I had, you know, certain crystals that I wore, or, you know, certain mantras or prayers or intentions that I set, that I wrote out, that I lit a candle, like I did the things. There's nothing wrong with ritual, right? It's all what we can do to help to support ourselves as we're learning these new ways of being. And I think, again, you know, this, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but the way that I was conditioned, the way I was trained, you know, from a small child was, as I said earlier, to be the one who read the room, who knew how people felt before they felt, they knew how they felt. And then to take action, to fix things and to put things into place so that, you know, I was kind of saving the world one person at a time. And a lot of that too, I am Reiki trained. I am a Reiki master teacher, certified. But the one thing that I learned was that even before the Reiki training was that my second chakra was really the place that I merged my energy with people. And when I was spending all of the time outwardly merging my energy that way, I was not making space for the creative birthing of new, coming into my own power and my own authority from that space, from that energy center, because I was so busy outwardly, using that energy as a way to make sure everyone else was taken care of. And so it was a long process, as this life is, right? This journey of little by little by little reclaiming my own power, my own authority over my energetic being, that allowed me to be clearer in setting the boundaries with others.
I had another question, but I want to stick with something that you had said about you kind of knew that it was through your second chakra. I'm curious, how did you know that? Because my gut right now, as soon as you said that, was, oh, well, mine's through my heart. But I don't actually know what it would be or how to know that, so that you know, maybe I work on that when I'm with somebody or after an energy. Like, I always know if I do yoga after being with somebody, I feel better. But I'm wondering if there's other practices that I can put into place, like if I do know that it's my heart chakra that's being, you know, affected by that.
Yeah. One of the things that I teach in the work that I do is this idea of being able to dial in our chakras. You know, those of us who are familiar with the chakra system, and if you're not, it's it's the seven, there's many more than seven, but primary energy centers in our body that start at our tailbone and go to the crown of our head. But we actually have the ability to sort of co-create. You know, the energy doesn't run the show. We can work with the energies. And so what I tend to teach people is to view each of your chakras as a dial. You know, so like a radio dial or a digital dial, whatever visual works. And to start to practice, like, what happens if I dial the, you know, looking at maybe 1 to 100. So what happens if I dial each chakra down, you know, to maybe 20%? How does that feel in my body? Very often, you know, the heart chakra is often where we show up in the world, both from our compassionate self. But we tend the lower three chakras, right? Our solar plexus chakra, sorry, I couldn't think of the word. Solar plexus chakra, which is, you know, in the diaphragm area, our sacral chakra, which is around the belly button, and our root chakra, which is at the base of our spine, really represent sort of the physical being in this world. And so while it might feel like we're connecting to people at other chakras, generally speaking, the first place that we connect is through the lower chakras, because that is our foundation. That is our sort of feet on the ground, connection into the earth, in the physical realm, energy places. And so when I'm looking at my chakras, I tend to dial down my lower chakras. And that doesn't mean that I'm shutting the energy down. I kind of think of it more as like, are you open and sort of the energy is going out of you, or are you closing it down and the energy is more being held within you? And so when you dial a chakra down, it's really just pulling that energy more inside of you and less outward. So it's not a, you know, a lowering of the vibration of that energy center by any stretch. But to go through each chakra and dial it in and find that place that feels resonant in your body is really a powerful act. And it is like when you do yoga, because as you were saying that, what I saw yoga do for you is it's sort of this automatic balancing of that, of those energy centers. And so when you can do that intentionally, perhaps not, you know, not having the opportunity to be on the mat, you can still get the benefit of how you show up in the world from those chakra centers.
Thank you so much for clarifying that. And yeah, yoga, I always say it's my reset. I mean, even if I'm having a bad day, my husband will be like, do you want to just take a moment and go on to your mat and just find a few minutes of peace? I'm like, yes, I do.
That's great.
It's super helpful. I mean, it's not when you're like in a crowded place and you're like, my mat's nowhere close by, I need it. But you know, it's been a journey, and like for me, very much like the being on the mat is like one part of my yoga journey, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. the meditation and being kind to myself and being kind to others. So it's this whole encompassing thing, but that physical movement of yoga, I really feel like sets me back to neutral and just makes mm-hmm. me feel better. And that was one of my questions I had, was you had said you find movement and a physical movement. What sort of physical movement do you find on a daily basis? And I'll even tie that in with what other sort of daily self-care and wellness rituals do you do that help, you know, keep you neutral and, you know, high vibing and all of that good stuff?
Yeah. So I have a daily practice of, well, it varies daily, but I do cardio, I do kickboxing, I'm a runner, I do pole dancing, Pilates, what else? I have a whole bag of tools for my physical movement. And what I've learned, and I love yoga, I don't want to leave yoga out. I was just in Hawaii last week and did some really beautiful yoga there on the island. But I look at where I am every day and I say, what does my body need? Some days it needs a gentle yin yoga practice. Sometimes it needs an hour and a half of like spinning it out on the pole sometimes, you know, it's something in between. And so having all of these different movement practices allow me to really discern what my body needs on that day. I tend to find, and I found this really solidly when my son went through his crisis, the opportunity for me to do a Baron Baptiste 40-day yoga practice program, at the time that my son had gone into the hospital for the second or third time, it couldn't have come at a better time, because I realized that the intensity of my outward situation needed the intensity of movement that matched. And so very active flow yoga in those moments was what kept me going. You know, but as I said, some days I wake up, I'm not feeling so great, you know, or I'm tired or achy from, you know, a heavier practice the day before. And that's when something more gentle, a yoga or a mat Pilates or something that allows me to really take care of my body. So there's an in-tuneness for me that's very important. And if I can match my energy with movement, that tends to be the thing that really helps to align, you know, reset myself back to center, as you were saying your yoga practice does.
Awesome. Yes, I love that so much. And I love the idea of being intuitive with your movement. And right now, I'm doing a very specific 30-day affirmation meditation. But I used to say that about my meditation too. People would be like, well, what do you do? I just go off of what I need for the day. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's guided, sometimes it's breath work. I have kind of I have a question that I'm genuinely curious about. With your children, do you find that, you know, having a movement practice, you know, being very in tune with your energy, do you feel like they have felt the reciprocal effect and it has affected them in a positive way?
I definitely think so, right? Children in general are sponges to action. You know, that we can talk all day long and give good advice and set the foundation verbally with our kids, but when we are modeling behaviors that are beneficial and that we're able to show that these behaviors for ourselves personally have this outcome that is positive, I think that modeling definitely carries through to children in general, but even people in general. I've found that my movement practices also influence and support, you know, people around me, from friendships to intimate partner relationships to, you know, strangers that I meet in community classes and that type of thing, that really start to recognize, oh, this is something that really works for me. And again, it's sort of like, it goes back to that, you know, don't do as I say, but do as I do kind of idea. Like, you know, when people can see it working and how it impacts you, I think that has the biggest value, you know, whether a child or an adult.
I love asking that question because I'm not a parent yet. I do have some friends who are parents, and, you know, it's for me right now, I'm like diving into this world of like human design. So every time like I get together with a friend, I'm like, let me do your chart. And it's funny because one of my girlfriends, she had a really, really colicky baby, and she really struggled with her baby and with postpartum depression and anxiety. And when I was going through her chart, she almost like broke down because she was like, you know, the one thing that I keep thinking of is because I was in such a bad space that I feel like it consistently transferred over to the baby, and that the baby was colicky because of me and because I wasn't in a great place. And so it's just interesting to see how those parallels happen. I also, you know, for me, I see it in my parents. When I was first doing my yoga journey, I was like trying to like drag the horse to the watering hole, like, come on, like, look how much changed me, you've got to change too. And when I finally relented and was like, you know what, you're either gonna see how it's worked for me or not, and you're going to come along for the ride or you're not. They kind of like reluctantly tiptoed their way over, but you know, I can even see now when my mom is like frustrated or something's going on, she'll just like, she's like, I just need to breathe for a bit. And my dad is very into this, you know, I'm just going to manifest this right now. I'm manifesting a win for my sports team. And it's, I mean, I think part of it is just like, you know, he's just like sees me doing, he's like, oh, I think it's cute and funny. But at the same time, I'm like, you keep going on to this manifestation route. I feel like it's like ebbing its way into you, maybe slowly, but it's like penetrating your skin.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You know, I love that so much, but, and that is such a great example of what I was just saying, right? I mean, if we break it down to the like bottom level, nobody really likes to be told what to do, you know, whether they're a child or whether they're an adult. And so that when they see, you know, it's kind of like that when Harry met Sally, like I'll have what she's having, right? It's like they see this enjoyment, they see the changes that are happening, and then they decide for themselves, you know, and some do and some don't. And the thing about like what you were saying with your friend and her colicky baby, and I had a colicky baby with my firstborn. Yes, the children pick up energy for sure. You know, everybody, I mean, we've talked about that most of this conversation, but I think we have to be really careful to just to be compassionate with ourselves that there's a bigger piece here of, you know, the journey that, that each soul has agreed to come in contact with each other to learn. And so, you know, it's part, it could be partially her energy, but also partially that there's something that's really juicy there in the space of how can I love myself when I'm at this really challenging experience? And how do I have compassion for this little one who is just being who they are in the moment? Does that make sense?
Yes, no, absolutely. I love that so much. I'm curious if someone is, you know, perhaps they feel like they have some sort of intuition. Maybe they're like, you know, I just can read a room really well, or I get little hits of like, this person should be doing this with their life. I feel like they would be a really good blah, blah, blah. What sort of advice would you give to somebody who's first sort of tapping into this? Would you say, you know, maybe go see your own intuitive medium to see if there's something there? Would you advise them to, you know, hook up with a mentor, or is there like an exercise somebody can do to see if this is a path for them?
Yeah. I mean, it's so personal and it's so individual. I'll start by saying, you know, we are all intuitive, right? We all have the ability to connect into our inner wisdom, our inner being, our inner knowing. You know, we can call it so many names. The thing that, and this was kind of part two to your question earlier that I didn't answer, but one of the things that I've been shown, right, is that our body is the biggest antenna to our intuition, to our inner knowing. And so one of the practices that I do every day, and this is a practice that anybody can do, you know, and in any way that it resonates with them, to start to really kind of come into connection with the physical body. Because from that place, it really does allow for a deeper hearing of the whispers of our intuition. But I do three steps in the morning, every morning, or as every morning as I can, because it's not about perfection. But as I'm waking up, I take, you know, 5 to 7 deep breaths, just with the intention of sort of calling my humanness back into my body from the dream state, from the unconscious state. And it just, I just take, you know, a minute or two and do these deep belly breaths. And then when I'm ready to roll out of bed, I stop with my feet on the floor and I kind of put my intention and attention on my feet and I ground there for just a minute. And I feel like, and I even imagine this many mornings of like dropping a pin on the map, right? I am here. And so again, it's just this idea that I'm intentionally getting up each morning, claiming my position in my physical body as I am here in this body, in this physical experience. And then when I feel ready and connected, I just set an intention for the day, not from the standpoint of something that I want to manifest or something that I want to see happen, but really from the intention of how do I want to feel today? What is that felt experience for the day? And what I have found is that by doing this consistently, I am much more present in the moment. I'm much more present in my physical body. And it's unfortunate because I feel like as a society, as a global collective, you know, many, many cultures are trained to believe that our body is somehow bad and flawed and wrong and separate from ourselves. And when we have that separation, we really have a harder time connecting into our inner wisdom, especially with the body being that antenna, as I talked about a few minutes ago. And so that's a great place to start. Like having that practice of coming home to ourselves every day allows for that connection to deepen. And then absolutely, I think that, you know, finding a mentor or having a reading, you know, whether it's intuitive or psychic or mediumship or, you know, astrology or human design, you know, whatever resonates with a person, but starting to come into a deeper understanding of who we are, each one of us individually in this life experience, opens the doorways to the possibilities of more understanding and more deep connection and more ability to listen to that inner wisdom, that intuition that we all have access to.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And your morning routine sounds super effective. It sounds super easy to implement and sounds super quick. I feel like sometimes people think, you know, morning routines need to be hour long, 2 hour long, and I don't have time for this. So I'm just going to grab my phone and go. And, you know, 5 to 7 deep breaths. I mean, that takes, you know, a minute too, you know, even if you're like, I'm taking 5 minutes just to not look at my phone, just to set the intention for the day. And then, you know, I'm a huge believer in grounding and just even the act of putting your feet on the floor, I think is so, so powerful. Cause I feel like so many of us are just like up out of the bed and we just go on with our day.
Yeah. And we do. And we move through the world and myself included, sometimes I have to be really intentional and aware of it. We move through the world and we don't have a connection to our physical body. And when we're really disconnected, we, you know, we have a tendency to walk into walls and bump into furniture and spill things and, you know, all of those kinds of indicators that we're really not connected to our body. But even to take a, you know, a stop, a break in the middle of the day and be like, oh, body, ooh, there you are. Like, I love to play the game of, what are my contact points? You know, as I'm sitting here in this chair talking to you, I can feel my hands, you know, resting on my legs. I can feel the back of my chair, you know, on my lower back specifically. I can feel, you know, the, even the way that the mic is, you know, connected into my ear. And you know, playing that, and I like playing the game, but I love to make a little bit of a game out of it. Like, oh, what are all my contact points? Because it's a really quick, like you said, it's a quick and easy way to just be like, boop, come back into connection. Here I am. I'm here. I'm present. I'm in my physical body. And, you know, I do also every day do some other morning practice, but it varies and it depends on what my schedule is. If I can at least get that small 3-step process I shared with you a minute ago in, that's big. But if I have time to journal, time to, you know, have a deeper meditation, time to do some, you know, movement that's just free form and free flow before I get into my actual movement practice for the day, it's powerful. And to be able to give ourselves the permission, you know, to have it look any way that we want, I think that's powerful too. I'm a little bit of a meditation rebel, and that I really don't like to have it be super structured. You know, sometimes I like to meditate, you know, laying on my back with my legs up the wall. Sometimes I like to be seated. Sometimes I like to lay down. Like sometimes I like to do my meditation while I'm walking or running or moving? You know, all of those things are valid. And so when we get to kind of create what works best for us, I think we have a better chance of sustaining a daily or almost daily practice.
Thank you so much for saying that. I couldn't agree more with you. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you wish I had asked you, or, you know, another tip or trick that you have that has really served you in following your purpose or just even setting you up for a great day?
Oh gosh. I mean, there's so many things that we could talk about still. I would say that the thing that I'd love to end this conversation with is the idea or the concept or the possibility that we can be loving and gentle with ourselves no matter what's happening. And that the more we can bring that loving, nurturing, you know, experience into our day-to-day lives, the easier it is no matter what's happening externally. There's so much power in sort of reclaiming that loving, nurturing part of ourselves. And by the way, in PS, our inner being, our inner knowing, our soul only comes from the place of loving and nurturing. And so when there's any other voice, whether it sounds like ourselves or not, whether there's any other information coming in that feels critical or judgmental or trying to beat us into submission, that's not our soul. That's not our inner being. That's our ego mind, you know, trying to find a way to have space and voice. But when we can discern sort of where the information is coming from, whether it's our thinking mind or our soul mind, and kind of keep coming back to that space of nurturing and compassion, it really lays the groundwork, not just for a good day to day, but for a really sustainable vibration that allows us to just ebb and flow more fluidly, you know, no matter what life brings our way.
And I just feel like life is just so much more fun when we're having a good time, when we're loving ourselves, when we're doing what we want. And, you know, not to say that we don't have our bad days, but truly, like, when you're just like truly tapping into your own desires and your own, you know, self-love, it just, life is just so much more fun.
Yeah, it's definitely sweeter. Yeah.
So before we end, and I send everybody to check you out, and I know you also have a book out, we have a final five, which is just five super easy, fun questions to get to know you in a different way. Are you ready?
I am.
Question number one is, what is a book, podcast, or resource that has brought you value and you want to share with the audience?
Oh gosh, ooh, there's so many. I just reread Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, and it continues to be my go-to reminder of how to really more deeply access the creative birthing, you know, new space within me that allows me to bring more and more joy and fun and expansion into my life.
Yeah, that's a really good book.
Yeah.
Who is a person or influencer that you look up to for inspiration?
Oh my goodness. There are so many. I have a real fondness for a woman named Tosha Silver, who speaks about the divine goddess within us and sort of our, whether we're male or female in gender, this divine, you know, sort of wild and untamed space in us that when we can embody this energy really allows us to be living our lives to the fullest.
Oh, she sounds amazing. I need to go check her out.
She's amazing. I love her.
What are you grateful for today?
Oh gosh, I am grateful that I live in the part of the U.S. right now that has sunshine most days. It is so important for my mental health and well-being to both be able to just view the sunshine, but also to feel the sunshine. Growing up in the northeast part of the U.S., we didn't have so much sunshine or as much sunshine. And it's, I don't really don't go a day without being so in awe and in gratitude to see the sun every day.
It's one of the things I keep saying about living in Canada. I'm like, why don't we have any hot places to go to or to live? Because even this summer, I'm going off on a little tangent here.
Yeah. No worries.
I have, like, as soon as the sun hit and we had consistent days and even weeks of, like, the sun is being out, I'm like, I need this in my life. Like, I have to have the sun. I feel better. I'm more high vibe. I keep saying, if there's any prime minister or any party out there that wants to, like, obtain, like, a sunny Caribbean island, like, I'm 100% voting for you, because being cold sucks.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. I mean, it does impact our feeling of well-being. And I remember even living in the Northeast and, like, finding the days in the middle of the cold of winter. And I grew up not far from Toronto, or not far from Canada, the Canadian border, that even through, like, sunshine through the window, right, in the middle of winter is such a joy. And then I can pretend pretending I was on my little Caribbean island at the time.
I know, I do the same thing. I go to the bay window. I'm like, I'm here for the next 20 minutes.
Yes, so good.
I am so curious about this question, but what is your spirit animal?
Oh, yeah. So my spirit animal is a crow. Or sometimes, you know, they'll crow and or raven, but mostly I really resonate with the crow. And the crow is the messenger that flies between the underworld and up to the, I guess, upper world, for lack of a better way to say it. And it's comfortable in diving into that, you know, dark, murkier space, but then also being able to come forth and bring that information, you know, to those that are not in that space. We haven't talked about astrology, but I have 5 planets in Scorpio, and most of my planetary energy resides below the midheaven line, so in the underworld. And so the crow just really resonates with me. In fact, I have a little charm that I often wear that's a crow.
I keep saying that when it comes to this question, I'm going to start writing down what I believe people's answers are, because I have been, like, 90% accurate with it. And I should have done it with you, because, I mean, being an intuitive medium, I had in my head, I was like, she's going to be a bird of some kind.
Yes.
So that's awesome. I feel like, yeah, you're definitely, like, the crow makes so much sense to me.
Yes. Yeah.
My final question for you is, what is your favorite form of self-care to practice?
Do I have a favorite? Well, I would say movement is absolutely my favorite. To me, it is play. And play just opens my spirit up. It just brings me to that place of really pure bliss.
One of the movement practices you said was that you were doing pole dancing, and I just had a friend who started doing it, and the amount of joy that this girl is going through, I'm like, I feel like I need to do this as soon as things open up. Like, I feel like I need to do this. It looks like yes. Such a blast.
It is a blast. It's funny because I thought I was really strong, physically before I started to do the pole dancing, the pole fitness. And I realized very quickly that I was not. But yeah, it is one of the things that brings me such joy, because it is powerful, but it's also, like, really taps into that feminine energy for me. It's this embodying of all of who I am. It's like the strength, the masculine and the feminine coming together. But it's super fun. And oh gosh, I would love to hear if you try, because I've been doing it for just about 3 years now. And it's so powerful in so many ways.
Yeah, no, she said the same thing too. She's like, my God, she's like, I thought I was really strong before this. And I'm like, just kidding. Like
exactly.
She says it's so much fun though. And yeah, it seems like a blast. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
If people want to check you out, Amy, if they want to grab a copy of your book, I know you also do a lot of speaking, you do coaching, you're doing so many amazing things. Where can everybody go and connect with you?
Yeah, the best place to connect with me is on my website. It's amywhite.co. And on the site, you know, I have links to my events, my digital courses, the work that I'm doing, the readings, the group events, all of the things. I am also on Instagram and on Facebook, but I'm really active on Instagram. In fact, I'm doing my first Instagram live today with another creator, so I'm super excited about that. But yeah, that's my website's really the place, and all the links are there.
Perfect. I will make sure that everything is linked in the show notes. Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been great.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you give it a 5-star rating and review. It takes 2 moments of your time and truly does make a difference in growing this community and showing support for the show. Make sure to stop by and say hi on social media, take a screenshot of this episode, tag our guest, tag me, and hashtag the show, hashtag BYL podcast. Share it out on your Instagram stories so that we can share it out on ours, and I will make sure to slide into your DMs to say hello. Until next Monday, everyone, I can't wait to see you then. Namaste.